Welcome to New World Notes, a series that explores the gap between the America we want and the America they're trying to make us settle for, and how we the people can reestablish our commonwealth and reclaim our democracy. Edited by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. Well, I'm told we have a new president now. Well, we'll have to see how good that is, but nobody's saying that's a bad thing, that's for sure. Do you recall during the campaign, McCain was saying that Obama was the most liberal person in the Senate? Can you believe that? Of course, this is the same person who said Sarah Palin is the most highly qualified to take over the Oval Office when my melanoma finally catches up with me. But it makes you wonder, if Obama is the most liberal person in the Senate, God help us all. We'll give him 100 days or so, see if he surprises us all with what he does as president. Certainly it'll be better than whatever other people might have done in their first 100 days. Which makes me think that, you know, decades ago, I was a college English professor. And one day we were studying some work of literature, I forget what, in class, and I asked a student whether he saw the writer's position as liberal or conservative or what. I forget what we were studying, probably some work of satire. Maybe Swift's argument against abolishing Christianity, or its modern equivalent, Tom Lehrer's The Vatican Rag. Anybody remember either of those ditties? Oh yes, those two are not only in the same ballpark, they're both playing outfield for the same team. Anyway, I asked if the view expressed was liberal or conservative. The student said he didn't know the difference between liberal and conservative. I gave him the textbook definition, the conversation resumed, and that was that. But that conversation has stuck in my mind for maybe 25 years, and I think either that kid was too ill-educated to be in a good college, or maybe he was sharper than most college students. Maybe he had caught on to something I myself had only a latent understanding of. Well, as they say in the Castro and Fire Island and in Provincetown, better latent than never. Sorry about that. Intentionally or not, the young man was on to something. And especially after 8 years of Czar Cheney and Obergruppenführer Bush, widely and wildly referred to as conservatives, one really has to cry, what the heck is a conservative? And for that matter, what the heck is a liberal? Since nobody in national government is calling himself a liberal anyway, let's get to the more important of the pair of questions. What the heck is a conservative? Is it conservative to radically increase the power of the executive branch while removing power from the Congress, the courts, and the people? Is it conservative to declare the Fourth Amendment null and void? Is it conservative to declare that the president, or any underling he designates, single-handedly has the power to strip any American citizen of all his constitutional rights simply by calling him a nasty name? Illegal enemy combatant. And why invent a convoluted new term like illegal enemy combatant? The Germans already had a perfectly good one we could have borrowed. I mean, the Nazis already were kind enough to lend us the homeland, die Heimat. Why didn't we borrow Untermensch while we're at it? Untermensch has far fewer syllables than illegal enemy combatant. Is it conservative to launch a major war of aggression overseas against a country that was absolutely no threat to ours or even to our allies because our state coveted the other victim's mineral wealth? Is that conservative? How about torture? Is that a conservative, traditional old American technique of war? Is it conservative to drive the country deep, deep into bankruptcy by spending trillions on a bloated military establishment and additional trillions on an indefensible war of aggression while drastically cutting taxes, at least for the rich? How about giving trillions of taxpayers' dollars with no strings attached to the same Wall Street felons who destroyed the real economy and plunged the nation into depression, just as these financiers' great-grandfathers had done in the 1920s. Is it conservative not to have learned any lessons from history, such as the history of the 1920s and the Great Depression? But giving these characters trillions of dollars with no strings attached, is that conservative? At this point, even Jonathan Swift, even Rabelais, would throw up his hands and say, "Some things are just beyond satire." Well, party hardy, banker boys. No wonder they called it the grand old party. And have a great old time. Yabba dabba doo! But, as Swift and Rabelais said, Bush's Texas-sized going-away present to his Wall Street buddies can't even be contemplated, let alone gazed upon. It's like when God appears. If you don't avert your gaze, you'll go blind. But seriously, the conservatives were always complaining about tax and spend Democrats. To me, tax and spend is beginning to sound like the real conservative position. You know, get the money before you spend it, instead of spend it first, then hope the world ends before the bill comes due. One last example, a smaller example than the Wall Street Fort Knox robbery. One small enough that a person can almost wrap her mind around it.
Politicians have traditionally hidden behind three things: the flag, the Bible, and children. No child left behind. No child left behind. Oh, really? Well, it wasn't long ago you were talking about giving kids a head start. Head start, left behind. Someone's losing ground here. But there's a reason. There's a reason. There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions.
No child left behind. Or, no child's behind left, as journalist Greg Palast calls it. For centuries, public school policies and public school curricula were set right above the grassroots level, at and by local school boards. Except in the largest cities, school boards comprised elected local people. The school board, like the zoning board. Who decides how close to a church you can open a bordello or a dirty movie theater? Who decides? The local zoning board, not the President of the United States. Who decides how many math courses you need to complete in order to get past ninth grade? Who decides how many foreign language courses the shop animals need to take? The local school board. Every now and then, the state legislature would get involved, generally to ill effect, and usually to the annoyance of the locals. But the legislature intervened not too often and not too heavily. Say they require a 10th grade course in the evils of communism, or more recently, they'd ban the teaching of evolution or the mention of contraceptives or something silly like that. Maybe they'd establish the minimum number of days in the school year or decree that teachers had to be paid at least 75% of the minimum wage. All the other decisions were made locally. Now, anybody remember school desegregation? When the federal courts ordered that public schools be desegregated, and with no more deliberate speed, but now toot de sweet. Who screamed the loudest about local control of schools and the federal government usurping powers the Constitution never gave it? Who screamed the loudest? Those who call themselves conservatives, of course. Racist and wrong-headed, many of them may have been. Still, for all the moral failings of at least some of them, they did have two points of logic on their side. First, racially integrated public schools were, by and large, an innovation, not a cherished old American tradition. Local control of schools, on the contrary, was a cherished old American tradition. And secondly, they suggested that when the federal government or federal judiciary starts getting involved in matters traditionally handled locally, the results are not always salubrious. Here I'm more ambivalent. I think it was good that the feds forced local restaurants and motels and so forth to serve people of color, regardless of local tradition. So call me a liberal. I don't care. I've been called worse. By my old scoutmaster, for instance. But here again, the conservatives, racist, homophobic wife-beaters, though many of them may have been, did have a point. The federal court-ordered school desegregation, as it was enacted in practice, was a disaster. Look around. It was expensive. It accelerated middle-class, mostly white, flight from the cities, and it accelerated the near destruction of urban public schools. It accelerated the racial segregation of cities and of suburbs. It greatly furthered the goal of right-wingers to privatize everything, from the post office to water to schools to the army. Indeed, if you look at our schools today, you can see that they are more privatized than they are racially integrated. The only party who benefited that I can see was General Motors, which seemed to have a monopoly on school buses. Finally, school desegregation, as it was enacted in practice, had the effect of getting working-class whites and working-class blacks fighting against each other rather than joining together and arm-in-arm fighting back against their common enemy. And no, I'm not referring to communism as their common enemy. I do think that setting white working-class people and black working-class people against each other and further destroying local institutions of democracy was indeed part of the plan. Possibly not the Supreme Court's plan. Maybe to them, school desegregation was just another example of let justice be done though the heavens fall. Yeah, fall on the working-class blacks and whites. In any case, increasing the racial discord in the working class was surely a motive of those who implemented the desegregation plan in each region. Take the most famous case, Boston. Boston's particular desegregation plan was approved and supervised by a federal judge from the area, therefore by a guy who had been endorsed and put into office by one of the most powerful and most corrupt political machines this side of Chicago. I know, Detroit, Trenton, and Philadelphia each claims the honor for itself. Whatever. So what did the powers that be in Boston do with the court's blessing and imprimatur? They racially desegregated schools in the working-class white neighborhoods of South Boston, bussing in just enough blacks to ensure distrust, fear, and racial conflict. Then, if my memory is correct here, they desegregated some of the working-class and poor black schools in the black neighborhoods of the Roxbury District, bussing in just enough working-class white students from South Boston to ensure distrust, fear, and racial conflict. And what about the white upper-middle-class-to-wealthy district of Beacon Hill? Surely you jest. The rich white students of Beacon Hill, except for the occasional dunderhead or felon, continued to attend private schools in New Hampshire or Connecticut. The upper-middle-class white students in Beacon Hill continued to attend the white public schools in Beacon Hill. What blacks got bussed into the public schools of Beacon Hill? Oh, you kidder! How about the white public schools in the white nearby suburbs, like Brookline or Newton? How many black students from Boston were bused to these above-average schools? Oh, there you go again. Brookline, sitting next to the Dukakis kids and some of the Lowells. Right. So, federally required desegregation of local schools? Well, the conservatives did not like it. No, not one little bit.
She's a real type A, and she's over-insured. Her favorite castaway is Thurston Howell III. She doesn't like big government, so it's no surprise I can be her lover long as I downsize. My conservative girl. full of passion, my conservative girlfriend. Every Friday we go liberal bashing. She got the Supreme Court,
Supreme Court,
tattooed on her bum,
tattooed on her bum,
beside an autograph port,
autograph port, dreamt of
Donald Rum,
spelled.
And from the day I checked her out from front to back, I knew her private sector could take up the slack. My conservative girlfriend got a tiny little heart full of passion. My conservative girlfriend, every weekend we go wilderness trashing. I close my eyes and I can see you ordering breakfast. You're having the spotted owl omelet, whites only. Come on, baby. Raise my interest rate, bust my union, light my library fire. She only deals in quality narcotics and guns. Got a Mexican wallet made from real Mexicans. My conservative girlfriend got a tiny little heart full of passion. My conservative girlfriend, her white collar and her redneck are clashing. My conservative girlfriend, she's looking for a good tongue lash in. My conservative girlfriend, every summer we go Medicare slashing.
Federally required desegregation of local schools? Well, the conservatives did not like it. No, not one little bit. So into town rides the love child of Ronald Reagan and William Howard Taft, Mr. W. Bush. Rides in atop Cavalry One. And next thing you know, W. is pushing federal school regulations. And when W. pushes, well, maybe we should complete that sentence some other time. And who's pushing right along next to him? Ted Kennedy. Jeez, there's 1,000 sincere people in eastern Massachusetts seriously trying to reform public education in America. And there's Ted Kennedy telling them to bugger off. Ask Bush, is it conservative to dictate local school curricula and local school standards and local school testing mechanisms from Washington, D.C.? Doesn't this sound like something the evil liberals would call for? Well, ask Mr. Liberal, Senator Ted Kennedy. Is it liberal to find schools that need help and, instead of helping them, turn them over to for-profit corporations so corporate America can make even more money from your kids while turning them even more completely into ignorant but brand-loyal couch potato consumers? I forgot. Maybe the Kennedy kids don't go to public schools anyway. Now, if you are the sort of person who listens to this sort of radio program, probably you know yet another fact that your neighbors have no inkling of. That the No Child Left Behind Act requires schools to turn over lots and lots of personal information about each student to the Pentagon. Information, like phone numbers for one, that they normally do not divulge to anyone. The Act requires it. Why are schools required to turn over this marketing information to the Pentagon? To help military recruiting. And if the military wants to resell this information to Coca-Cola, I suppose that's their business. Now, you know, a parent can exempt her own child from this reporting requirement, but only if the parent knows that she can, and only if she then contacts the school and fills out all the proper forms. I guess she's just out of luck if the school has already turned over the list by then, and she can't do anything to help her neighbor's kids. So, I can't take credit for this, but somebody recently said, No Child Left Behind started out as the Republicans' education policy. Now No Child Left Behind is their armed forces staffing policy. So will somebody please tell me? And right-wingers like Pat Buchanan and Kevin Phillips are saying the same thing. What the heck is a conservative today? And if Bush and Cheney were conservatives, what else would you have to do to be considered a fascist? And if Pat Buchanan is a right-wing nutcase, and I'm a left-wing progressive populist, which I do consider myself, how come I agree with 85% of what Buchanan says and only 65% of what Ted Kennedy says? Shouldn't it be 85% Kennedy and 15% Buchanan? It ain't. And what does it take to get indicted for treason these days? Having genital sex with a White House intern? Considering that oral sex will only get you impeached. And usually, in the case of Clinton, they weren't even complete acts of oral sex. How can I say this more delicately than Ken Starr did in the Starr Report? The Florida Citrus Commission used to have this awful commercial with Anita Bryant chirping, "Breakfast without orange juice is like a day without sunshine." Well, Clinton's slogan was, "Oral sex without Kleenex is like cheating on Hillary without the orange juice." Monica thought he was a nutcase, and of course she was right, as usual. "Excuse me, Monica, I gotta cut this short and lob a cruise missile at the only aspirin factory in Sudan." "Yeah, we're gonna tell everybody it's a chemical or biological weapons plant, I forget which." "Yeah, I'm doing this as a favor for Johnson & Johnson. Those Sudanese really ought to be buying Tylenol from us instead." "Honey, toss away this here Kleenex on your way out, won't you?" Yes, I continue my lonely crusade to rehabilitate the reputation of Monica Lewinsky. And after Monica, Martha Mitchell. Anybody remember that unjustly defamed woman? She said the Nixon administration was horribly corrupt. Some have disagreed with Ken Starr and me. They'd say, "Just take one look at Clinton. Isn't he obviously the sort of guy who would pass right by the Kleenex and reach for new lotioned puffs?" I say, life is too short. Kleenex, puffs, conservative, liberal, fascist. If anyone can tell the difference, send your answer to New World Notes, care of this station. The most amusing winners will be read on the air. So far, the only person since Barry Goldwater who has made any serious attempt to define what conservative means is Roy Zimmerman. And even he spends more time cataloging typical features than actually defining. So I'll let him sing the last word on the subject. As Gene Shepherd would say, "What a can of peas we've opened. What a can of peas."
I saw a blinding flash of light, so I pulled over to the first church on the right.
And I feel so good.
Feel so good.
Ain't
about
no
it.
Doubt.
Ain't no doubt.
Want to laugh and shout about it. Because I once was a liberal, but I ain't no liberal no more. I saw a bum on the curb today. Hey! Well, I hit the gas and covered him with gutter spray, and I feel so good.
Feel so good about
no
it.
Doubt.
Ain't no doubt
Wanna
about it.
Laugh
Wanna
and
laugh and
shout about it. Because I once was a liberal, but I
ain't no liberal no more.
My heart is jumping and my head is swimming. I feel like I could take the vote away from women.
And I feel so good.
Feel so good about
ain't no
it.
Doubt.
Ain't no doubt
Wanna
about it.
Laugh and shout about it. Because I once was a liberal, but I
ain't no liberal no more. On that joyful day, yes, on that glorious day, the day I threw my Birkenstocks away, the angel told me, "Oh, ye man of sin,
open up your bleeding heart and let Pat Buchanan in."
I saw a starving third world nation, so I exploited its underprivileged population.
And I feel so good.
Feel so good about
ain't
it.
No doubt.
Ain't no
Wanna
doubt about it.
Laugh
and shout about it.
Because I
once was a liberal, but I ain't no liberal no more.
I
want to be there when we take the streets. So I cut out two little eye holes in my sheets. I feel so good.
Feel so good about
ain't
it.
No doubt,
ain't no doubt about it.
Laugh,
wanna laugh and shout about
because
it.
Because I
once was a liberal, but I ain't no liberal no more.
Oh, on that joyful day, yes, on that glorious day, the day I burned up all my macrame, the angel told me what is good for GM
is good for me
and me
and me
and to hell with the rest of them.
I used to be so paranoid, but now I'm what?
Nothing. I feel so good.
Feel so good about it. Ain't no doubt about it.
Wanna
laugh and shout about it.
Because I once was a liberal, but I ain't no liberal. And I once was a peacenik, but I bought stock in Lockheed.
And I once was a union man,
but I got me this nice office.
And I once was a feminist,
but I just don't understand women.
And I once supported rent control.
Then I inherited some property.
And I once was anti-censorship,
but I don't have time for fiction.
And I once hated racism,
but I figure why fight it.
And I once had compassion, but I ain't no liberal.
Before all the liberals who were paying only half attention start making angry phone calls to the station, let me point out, I did not say anything negative about racial integration, including school integration. I'm in favor of it. My son goes to an integrated public school and we're all happy, okay? What I said was, if you want to prevent lasting integration and destroy the public schools in the process, just go about integrating the same way they did it last time. And the ruling elite will thank you for your help. New World Notes comes to you from radio station WWUH-FM, a community service of the University of Hartford. The opinions expressed here are mine alone, of course. To learn more about the show, to receive the free weekly newsletter, to learn how to download your own copy of any installment of this program, just take a look at our blog and all questions will be answered. That's newworldnotes.blogspot.com. No www, just newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From darkest New England, Illegitimi non carborundum, have a good week and see you again soon, I hope.